this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
From a distant galaxy, we have come to Earth. Mostly to eat tacos, but we will be the masters of those tacos. Make no mistake about it, we're also Junk Food Cinema!
Hi.
Hey everybody, how's it going? And it's still the summer of 87, and we are chugging along with, oh my gosh, so exciting, this movie that we're talking about, because it is, it's exactly what this show is all about, because it's very high affinity and not so high quality. But it's our preferred quadrant of that graph.
This is the second part of a two-parter. For those of you that checked out last week's RoboCop episode, of course, this is the movie I saw 2 hours before I saw RoboCop. I saw this in the greatest double feature of my life. As a 12-year-old boy, I went to a Tucson, Arizona drive-in and not knowing what I was going to see, and ended up seeing RoboCop preceded by Masters of the Universe.
Of the Universe.
A film I quite enjoyed at the time, but was blown immediately out of my brain by fucking RoboCop.
Sure.
Because RoboCop, you know, you stack these films together, there's nothing this film has on RoboCop except more fourth wall breaking camera looks.
And the fact that if RoboCop had been one of the action figures in your collection of Masters of the Universe, you wouldn't have had a second thought about it.
No, because he except that he looks cooler.
Well, yes, but this is true.
But so this is actually also kind of an echo of something we talked about last year, when we talked about
last year,
Transformers, last year. 1986. This movie is very much about the toy culture of the 80s as much as it's about anything else.
And before we invite you in around the hearth to play with all of our toys, we got a little housekeeping to do, so let's get that started. I'm Brian Salisbury. He is C. Robert Cargill. He's a novelist, a screenwriter, a real man at arms when you cut in front of him at the buffet. And this is, of course, Junk Food Cinema, your weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. And I'm very excited to once again announce that JFC is now a part of the Blog Talk Radio family. And you can find us there at Blog Talk Radio. You can still get us on iTunes. And actually, the good folks at Blog Talk Radio worked some unicorn magic. And you can now get all of our back catalog episodes on iTunes. Whereas before, we were confined by this 100 episode force field that we just could not break. They have found a way around it, and you now have the power to download all of our back catalog episodes, starting in the very first one.
Do you want me to love you, Blog Talk Radio? Because that's how you get me to love you.
And it was immediate. It was like, oh, we can fix that for you. It's done. I was
bam,
like,
but all of a sudden, yeah, they knew the button to press or the person to call. And then all of a sudden, boom, our entire back catalog is now on iTunes.
They are super amazing. That is the reason that you have started to hear ads at the beginning of the show. I will say, if you are someone who doesn't like ads on your podcast, I totally get it. And I understand. Here's a great way to get around those ads. Go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema and become a patron, one of the inner sanctum of Junk Yawns, a master of our universe. For as little as $4 a month, one of the many things that you will get is I will actually drop the audio from the podcast early with no ads, just for you. So you will not only get mailbags, junk food a la modes, the Summer of 77 series that we're also doing under this one, you will also get episodes early and ad-free. So I don't know what you're waiting for. It is cheaper than buying a 12-inch action figure or a Battle Cat playset.
For the price of a cup of coffee, you too can enjoy the dulcet sounds of us.
Yeah.
Doing top fives and talking about reviewing modern films and answering your questions.
And if you didn't realize it, we had Sally Struthers here in the studio letting you know that you can, in fact, for the price of a cup of coffee a day, support, not a day.
Do you know how much a cup of coffee costs these days? Like,
I don't know, Dennis Leary. Why don't you tell us? Why don't you go on a quick scree about how much coffee is right now at the top of the show? Hey, if you would like, if you like screes, by the way, or if you're more of a Kroll fan, I don't know. You can go at Junk Food Cinema on Twitter or junkfood.com/Facebook. No, strike that. Reverse it. Facebook.com/junkfoodcinema and get all of our sometimes we quote the movies to give you a hint of what we're covering. Sometimes it's just me posting GIFs. You never know, but Facebook, actually, we have a Facebook group just for our patrons that we use to do some Facebook Live stuff. There's a lot of ways that we interact.
That I just found out about last week.
Yeah, you're going to be a part of the next one for sure. So, yeah, we've got a lot of stuff going on for the people who support us. We really do appreciate you guys doing that. And I think that's... Oh, wait, no, it's not all the housekeeping because we are coming up on ArmadilloCon here in Austin, Texas, which is taking place the weekend of August 5th. And actually, on August 5th at 8 p.m., Junk Food Cinema Live will be a part of ArmadilloCon.
Here in Austin, Texas. And the following week in Omaha.
Omaha,
Junk
Nebraska.
Junk Food Cinema Live, Omaha.
We are coming for you August 12th.
I'm coming for you.
That's the phrasing on that. We're not showing the Apple, which has a song called I'm Coming For You. That was not a hint. That was just me not thinking about my words before they spilled out of my mouth. Alamo Drafthouse Omaha will be hosting as cargo said, the Junk Food Cinema Marathon. We're showing, and they've actually posted this, so we can tell you that we're showing Die Hard with a Vengeance. We're showing Speed. And we're showing Tango
Cash.
Because of course we are. But this is awesome because not only you get to see those three movies, not only are we doing a live podcast, there's a specialty junk food menu and an exclusive t-shirt that you will get at the event. So it's a pretty big thing, and I'm super excited about it. You can go to drafthouse.com for tickets to that. They are still available, but in or around the Omaha area, we hope to see you there. You know what else I hoped to see and was not disappointed was a revisit to Masters of the Universe.
Oh my God, the housekeeping's over.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I love this movie.
So much housekeeping.
Yeah, we really need to start paying one of those maid services with the VW bugs and the hands on top. If you don't live in Austin, I sound like a crazy person, but that's a real thing.
If you do live in Austin, you sound like a crazy person.
Fair enough. Masters of the Universe.
At the far end of the universe, there is a planet ruled by a being of utter evil. And there is only one man who dares challenge him. They are locked in a battle to the death. A battle that will take them across the heavens.
Stop him!
A battle that will finally be fought.
I want them to get out and brought to me!
Across the face.
Police! Nobody move!
Of Earth.
Can you show us the way?
Of course.
No.
From a distant galaxy, they have come to Earth. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man. Frank Langella as Skeletor. Only they have the powers to be. Masters of the Universe. Live the adventure.
Oh my God. Oh my God, this movie.
This movie, like, this is one of those movies that my wife, I don't think, had ever seen. And I think that because,
which is shocking.
Because we were watching it, we were just chilling on the bed this afternoon, and she just leans over 20
minutes. Wait, whoa, where's this story going?
This story goes to where she leans over and just looks at me, and she goes... This is a weird fucking movie, Cargill. And I'm kind of like, yeah, it is. And it's weirder than I remember it. Like, I remember all the major plot elements of it, but there were a lot of things that had completely just melted out of my brain and that I didn't realize was part of this movie, making this a weird, weird stew of a film. Now, of course, what you have is you have, again, 80s toy culture.
Battle Armor Skeletor and He-Man figures each sold separately from the Masters of the Universe collection. Beastman figure also sold separately from Mattel.
Masters of the Universe was insanely popular in the early 80s. It had this small window of just being the it toy. It was a toy. They launched a cartoon series with it. The cartoon series actually had a lot of really talented people on it who fought for a lot of quality that wasn't exactly in... the toys themselves at time.
Oh, I have some questions about the toys.
Yeah. Let's begin with the fact that the character's name is He-Man.
It's slightly redundant, you might
say.
Slightly.
And that wasn't really something that the kids cared about. He-Man. It was, how do we make someone more masculine than just man? Well, he's He-Man. And there was some really cool elements.
Think about
to
how
it.
Progressive they would have been if they'd come out with a toy called She-Man.
There was She-Ra, who was his cousin. And I, you know, you kind of wonder.
Those cousins are fucking.
Why wasn't she She-Woman? I mean. Well, it's like that's too derivative. She'll be She-Ra. And I have a friend who actually gave me this great breakdown of the fact that the only male in that in She-Ra was actually the gay best friend, and it all the math works. So it was a really, and I wouldn't doubt it, because the people who are making these toys, there's a certain element of we don't give a fuck to it. Like, that's what's kind of neat about it. So you've got He-Man, you've got Man-at-Arms, you've got Battle Cat, which of course, why would you not fucking love a Battle Cat? And then you start getting, okay, we've got the main villain Skeletor, because he looks like a skeleton. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Beast Man, and then it starts going weirder and weirder.
And here's my biggest problem, because first of all, a little backstory. I was obsessed with these toys as a kid. I had all the playsets. I had like those big vinyl containers that you used to put action figures
in. Oh, yeah.
I had multiples of those full of these dudes. I thought they were cool. But one thing, even as a kid, really bothered me, and this is in the movie, is that
so it's not the skunk? That's
it's
a big
not
walking
the skunk,
fart
but
joke.
I did have that. I had that action figure.
Zingor with real smell is new from the Masters of the Universe collection. Other action figures each sold separately from Mattel.
One thing that bothered me.
He made an action figure that was a fart joke.
Well, yeah.
He was just a fart joke.
Yes, and I have no problem with that, because that was kind of the cool thing about kids' toys at the time, is that they were allowed to be weird and gross. In a way that I don't feel kids' toys are allowed to be anymore.
Oh, no. No, there's no other time in history where you were allowed to have a 12-inch tall, damaged Vietnam War vet who goes out into the backyard so he can kill the Vietnamese.
Or
like, that is that only in the 80s could you have a Rambo action figure with a 12-inch Colonel Troutman.
Oh, my God.
I had the 12-inch Colonel Troutman.
A toy that's been trained to ignore pain.
From Mattel.
So the thing that bothered me is, well, the thing with the gross toys is, like, if you look at the Ninja Turtles and the way they're designed, as a kid, it was like there was like one Ninja Turtle who was like half man, half cockroach, and just had like smaller bugs in plastic glued to him. It was a time for gross toys, and I really dug that. But what I did not appreciate, even as a kid, was the fact that, and they touch upon it in the movie, the big part of the plot is they're trying to save the sorceress and take back control of Castle what now?
Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull. Now, this never made sense to me, because the bad guy is called Skeletor, but Castle Grayskull is the stronghold of the
He-Man.
Hero? Like, so
Prince Adam.
See, I feel like that's just one stubborn guy at the toy company. It's like somebody walked in and they're like, hey Larry, good job on this artwork you did for the Grayskull playset, but you painted He-Man in front of it instead of Skeletor. And Larry's just like, no, that's where He-Man lives. But it's called Castle Grayskull, and it looks very foreboding. Why would this be where they... Nope, that's where he lives.
Because that's where Skeletor really wants to be.
It's the seat of
his
power.
His goal is to get into the perfect house that matches his identity.
Yeah.
You know, when you're looking, you want a house that looks like you belong there, and Skeletor looks like he belongs in Grayskull.
You are making Masters of the Universe sound like one of those real estate reality shows where it's like, find my perfect house. On this episode, we've got Skeletor from Eternia. He's looking for something in a split level.
He's
a moat.
He's a bartender, and his wife is an unemployed volunteer, and they have a $900,000 buy.
You found my dream house. He does not talk like that in the movie, thankfully.
He wants a two-story downtown in San Francisco for $900,000.
But I feel like it's... Dude, I feel like it's the same fucking thing that happened with G.I. Joe. What are the bad guys in G.I. Joe called? Just before we get into the movie, I know, sidebar, whatever. Fuck it. What are the bad guys in G.I. Joe called?
Cobra!
Cobra! All their worst baddies are named after snakes. They've got this huge serpent fetish. They're not even hiding it. So, of course, you would name the ninja that works... for Cobra, Snake Eyes, right? Nope. Snake Eyes, inexplicably, is a good guy. He's a G.I. Joe. Hey, Larry, you forgot to paint the Cobra emblems on this Snake Eyes action figure. No, he's a G.I. Joe. I don't want to... He's a G.I. Joe. but you went to all this trouble to tell me that every bad guy was named after, they're called Cobra. They yell Cobra when they go into battle. They're all about the snakes. Look, I don't want
Snake guys. It's a DICE reference.
Look, it's DICE. I don't have time for this. I put in my 2 weeks notice. I'm going to go work for Mattel. I'm getting on this Masters of the Universe project. It's going to be great. So I'm pretty much checked out. So you guys can deal with that and I'll come back later.
You guys turned down my Skunk Man idea for G.I. Joe. I'm going to go to the department that gives a shit about my creative itty.
My itty. What was it you said the other day that it, something was very iconic?
Iconic.
You literally put like you were iconic. Like you put so much emphasis on the word on the syllable of con.
On the syllable.
It's going to be a thing in every episode now where you just your emphasis goes AWOL and I like it. So this movie is produced by.
It's your favorites.
Oh my God, yours and mine. Canon Films.
Golden Globus, baby.
The third time we're talking about them in this series because, for this summer.
Yeah, and if we ever do summers again, we won't be discussing them again because this is the summer that killed them, and this is one of those movies. There's a reason why we're hitting these movies, even though you might be like, all right, guys, I get why you kind of want to talk about Masters of the Universe, but really? They're so you haven't done Interspace yet. Yes, really. We're going to talk about Masters of the Universe because this is very important to what they were playing towards, who they were aiming at. They were aiming at us. You know, they're aiming at kids like me in this particular era, and they were swinging and missing. And this is another one of those movies. This movie has a very crazy production history. This movie has a lot of problems. And this movie is just kind of a mess.
Oh, my God.
It's
but a glorious mess.
I mean, I love that it's called Masters of the Universe because if it were called He-Man, they might actually have to give him some character traits other than just greasing up Dolph Lundgren.
How are they going to give character traits to a guy who can't speak English? Like, he's struggling with actual English letter characters. Let's have him, that's the character work he's going to do, figuring out how words work. And yes, this movie is sometimes erroneously credited as the film that destroyed canon. It's not. It's one of a trio of films that destroyed canon.
Four films.
What was the fourth one?
Oh, we still have it in our special episode later this season on the worst movies of the summer.
No. That's one of the three. If you're talking about Superman 4.
Yeah.
Superman 4, Over the Top, and Masters of the Universe were the movies, the three movies that in the same year, and this is why it was a bad idea, Golan and Globus's model was they would make a bunch of low-budget movies, just shove them all out there as quickly as they could, wait for one or two of them to work, and then use that money to make the next 10 films. They weren't the guys spending $20, $30 million on a single movie.
No, I was including American Ninja 2 in there.
The confrontation.
American Ninja 2, I doubt, had a budget bigger than $300,000.
When I was counting four, that's what I was, because they had four movies this summer.
You're right,
they did.
That was
the fourth.
They did have four movies in the summer, but I feel like if you're going to look down at the bottom line of those movies and figure out which ones cost them too much money.
American Ninja 2 is literally the least of the problems that summer, but I was just counting them.
Yeah, American Ninja 2, The Confrontation, Super Ninjas, fuck it. Definitely cost them almost $100,000, whereas all of these other movies combined were close to $100 million, and that was not the Golden Globus.
And what they got out of it was Over the Top, Masters of the Universe, and Superman 4, A Quest for Peace.
Movies that only assholes like us will talk about in 30 years is, I think, was the tagline for all of those movies. So yes, Masters of the Universe is their attempt this is one of their Hail Mary passes. All the junk bonds they've invested in are blowing up in their face. All these things that they bought, these theater chains and these libraries and all this, they were starting to sell off. And this was like, okay, it's a hugely popular toy. We are going to make this movie. It's going to be a huge blockbuster. We've already greenlit a sequel directed by Albert Pune, who I keep mistakenly saying directed this movie, but apparently I was not far off.
Was he actually hired to direct the second one? I know they built sets for the second one, and the sequel sets, since they were already built, got used by Albert Pune for Cyborg.
Oh, no. Cargill, not only was he hired to direct the sequel to Masters of the Universe, he was going to simultaneously direct Masters of the Universe 2, Masters of the Universe 2 : Cyborg, and their Spider-Man movie. And they were going to film it at Dino De Laurentiis' studio in North Carolina at the same time, which is like, if this movie...
Albert Pune can't direct one movie at time. How is he supposed to direct two?
You split Albert Pune's attention from the one movie he can't direct into two movies he can't direct.
He just put out a trailer for his 54th film, and it's such a mishmash of gobbledygook. It will make your blood boil, because when it goes Albert Pune's 54th film, just saying that causes you pain. Because
really,
I think I like two more Albert Pune movies than you do. And you only like one of them.
I can't tell if you're complimenting me or insulting me when you say that. Like, that is how obscure that is. But yeah, no, I'm going to go way on a limb and say in this trailer for his 54th film, like he's fucking Quentin Tarantino, the 54th film by Albert Pune.
Yes, that is exactly what he does.
I know that's what he's doing. It doesn't work when it's 54 instead of 4. But I'm going to go way out on a limb and guess that he's wearing a shirt with wolves howling at the moon like he's fucking Dwight Schrute, because that's what that guy wears. He dresses like your weird cousin from Alaska. I don't know what that's about, but I'm going to guess that's what he's wearing in that trailer. And I don't even need to see it or any other Albert Pune movies going forward.
And we'll definitely never see Masters of the Universe 2, because this ended up torpedoing that.
It did. And that's the craziest part about it, though, is they built the sets thinking that they were going to the plot of the second one. And there's a lot of controversy about this issue, like all these kind of various stories. But the one I believe is that they greenlit the sequel before this one came out, because that's entirely Golan and Globus. They would go to Cannes and they would start selling the overseas releases.
Yeah, it was the old Corman model, where he would take the posters out to Cannes, and then the posters that people bought, he would come back and make the movie.
Exactly. And that was, so they were already selling, oh, we're going to make Spider-Man and Masters of the Universe 2. So they started to build sets and costumes. They had already cast somebody to play He-Man, because Dolph Lundgren said he wasn't going to come back. Surprising when you see this movie that somebody from it wouldn't want to come back. So they were all set to go, and then when the studio went belly up, they still had all of these sets, and they're like, "Well, what the fuck? We got to make a movie. We've got like all of these lawyer fees we need to pay. We need some income." So they tasked Albert Pune to take the sequel script, Masters of the Universe 2: Cyborg, and those sets, which the story was that Skeletor comes to Earth and basically and causes an apocalypse, and the whole movie's post-apocalyptic. So all these post-apocalyptic sets and costumes, but no Masters of the Universe. Just take off the words Masters of the Universe and call it Cyborg, and they rewrote it for Jean-Claude Van Damme.
So here is the point that we need to stress in talking about what's so weird about this movie.
The point we need to stress is we will eventually talk about this movie.
Anyway. Well, we are talking about this movie. I am segueing into it while you're interrupting my segues.
That's what I do. I do that downtown, too. I just
Damn
throw
it.
Sticks in front of them. Go ahead.
This is this era where you're making such low budget movies, and there was such a hunger for a while for science fiction and fantasy. I mean, He-Man is just a mashup of Star Wars and Conan the Barbarian. Like, that's literally what it is on paper. That's literally what the cartoon is. And that's really what the design of this movie is. Like, they wanted stormtroopers, but they didn't want to rip off stormtroopers, so they made all the stormtroopers look like Darth Vader. So you just have all of these Darth Vader-looking stormtrooper guys who can't shoot. And
even have samurai helmets, or like samurai-inspired helmets like Darth Vader.
Yes. Yeah. No, exactly. Like, they look like fucking Darth Vader. They were really running and gunning with that, but they didn't want to go to the expense of actually paying to make it a fantasy slash science fiction film. So, hey, let's have them come to Earth, where they will then, you know,
where we can film it at a mall,
where we can film it at a mall, where we can film it downtown, we can film it on the what looks like the Back to the Future set.
So much so that we got James Tolkien to be in the movie.
Yes. Like, there's moments in this where if I showed you quick clips of this, you'd be like, I don't remember this from Back to the Future. And then Dolph Lundgren walks up and you're like, oh, that's why.
You remember the Principal Strickland from Back to the Future 2, when Marty goes to the darkest timeline and he's got like a gun and he's running around on his front porch? That's
this guy. It's the same fucking guy.
It's that character.
It's the same fucking guy. Like, not just the same actor. He's doing the same performance. Like, it is. It's almost like they went in and scooped up some scenes off the cutting room floor from Back to the Future 2.
And they found the dial on his New York accent and just cranked it all the way up, because, dear God, this movie takes place in California, and he sounds like he is Brooklyn. Like, he is the embodiment of the borough of Brooklyn throughout the whole movie.
Well, I get the impression that there's not a lot of care put into the artistry of this film.
How dare you? I mean, all you have to do is hear Dolph Lundgren speak in this film, and you will know that his contract clearly stated that he had five chances, not three, five chances to deliver his own lines before they were allowed to dub him. And apparently the fifth time was the goddamn charm, because that's what we got, and it was considered passable. And here we are.
Yeah. Now, but we're going to have a lot of fun bagging on this one.
It's kind of hard not to. Like, as much as we love this movie, for fuck's sake, it's Masters of the Universe, guys.
But what we've also got to do is acknowledge why we love this movie. Because the thing is this is a movie that is not just to be enjoyed ironically. You can ironically, because there's some shit in here. Like, this is it's a bit slapdash. There's some of the dialogue is truly awful. The plot, the ultimate MacGuffins, make almost no fucking sense whatsoever.
The whole plot of this movie is Skeletor is trying to get a key, and he's got a key. He's trying to get a cosmic key, and he has the fucking cosmic key the whole time. He wants a second one.
No, it's not that he wants a second one. It's that he wants to destroy the second one so that they can't interrupt the ritual. He's trying to the key. Okay, long story short, there's a magical cosmic key that when you play some music, it could take you anywhere in the universe. So that was the point I was making a little earlier with the going to Earth. That's the whole idea of their Masters of the Universe movies, was they have a magical key that can take them anywhere in the universe. So they keep fucking coming here.
Yeah, because it's cheaper than filming in Eternia.
Exactly.
Or pretending you're in Eternia.
But so He-Man ends up getting a second key along with his buddy Man-At-War and his daughter Thela.
And Gwildor. Let us not forget the Orko analog in this movie, Gwildor, played by the great Billy Barty.
Billy Barty, baby!
Town USA fame, and other better movies as well.
And other worse movies, Somewhere Under the Rainbow.
See, and here's what I'm going to say right off the bat. Cards on the table. As much as I love a lot about this movie, even the bad stuff, Billy Barty's the part of this movie that I just...
Oh, no.
So rubs me raw.
No. Billy Barty...
Jar Jar Binksing all over this movie, and I'm just like, oh, please... Please stop. Please
but here's stop. But here's the thing about it, and this is key for this. This Cosmic movie this. Never, ever takes itself seriously. It just refuses to. So much so that you get a lot of really strange, silly moments of comedy. You get Billy Barty, you know, going almost full Jar Jar at times. And then you get these fourth wall breaking camera looks. And there's one that is so groan-inducing that that it's almost painful. Like, there's this moment where Thela comes out to save the day, goes and blasts a bunch of says, "I thought this fight could use a woman's touch." Stands up, pew 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 pew, kills a whole bunch of Darth Vader stormtroopers, and then turns and looks at the camera and goes, "Woman at Arms," which of course her dad's name is Man at Arms.
Oh, and we're just laughing our asses off, aren't we?
But the thing is that this is very much the tone of the movie. The movie, it's something that I both love and hate about it. Like, I would never encourage anyone to make a movie with this tone. It's a tone of a film in which the people making it don't respect the material and are just like, fuck it, let's just have fun, that we're making this for kids anyway. It's a kids movie. Let's let the kids have fun. And they do. And they make a movie that as a kid, I did fucking love. That I watched it, and at the end of Masters of the Universe, I wasn't like, oh man, that's what that was. I was like, fuck yeah, Dolph Lundgren's awesome. That movie rocks. I love Gwildor. It was so very entrenched in its time. And of course, you know, here we are 30 years later, and I'm a 41-year-old man, and I look at it and I go, you know, that's some shit, right, Cargill? And I'm like, yeah, I know that's some shit. So the thing is that tone prevents you from actually taking any of their bullshit seriously, because they clearly don't give a shit, but they managed to get some things right along the way.
But here's what I find so weird, and this is actually why I love movies like this, is you're right. On the one hand, they have chosen a tone to be tongue-in-cheek and not take themselves seriously. In the same movie, however, is Courtney Cox in her first major film role. That's amazing.
Which comes hot on the heels of her being cast in a Springsteen video that everyone had fallen in love with.
Yeah, this is the fire after that spark, because you can't start a fire without that spark. That's what I learned from that song. The problem is that her storyline is super maudlin. Her parents have just died in a plane crash that she feels responsible for. And as a result, she is just skipping town. Now, you'll notice...
Leaving her boyfriend,
leaving her friends, just going to California or going...
Leaving her great job at Robbie's Chicken Shack.
Yeah, okay, that part's not going to be hard. But you'll notice they're not... She's not selling that house that her parents had. So she's literally just leaving everything she knows, like some kind of transient, and just disappear. Like, that's some pretty heavy shit. And especially toward the end when you're like, she goes and visits their grave, and then she wants to be sent back to before they died and tries to stop them from taking that plane trip. Like, that's a lot of heavy shit for a kid's movie. Like, maybe unnecessarily dramatic is what I'm getting at. But Dolph, I want to go back for just a second to Dolph Lundgren rocking the most awesome of hockey hair in this movie.
And glistening in every, like, they oiled him up in every fucking scene. Like, it's, yeah, like, he, every scene before he goes out, he's clearly just pumped some iron, they've oiled him up, and he comes out looking like a Greek fucking god.
Oh yeah, the other two masters of the universe that aren't mentioned in this film are Johnson and also Johnson, because the amount of baby oil on Dolph Lundgren, but I swear to, between that and the hair, I mean, he really does look like, he looks like he should be master of the Yukon territories.
And that outfit is not his outfit from the toys. And I kind of wish they had I don't know if they ever made one, but a Dolph Lundgren movie version of He-Man would have been pretty fucking sweet.
They actually did apparently release toys specific to this movie. Like, what's the lizard dude's name? Like, the only one of the,
He was expensive prosthetic guy that looked like he was in a real movie that we killed off early on so we didn't have to keep doing him.
It's a bit of a mouthful, man. But I think that, man, thank you. I was like, that doesn't sound, oh, you added man to the end of it? Yeah, now that absolutely sounds right. That character, they definitely made that into a toy, and that wasn't a Master of the Universe prior to.
And that highlights one of the great things about this movie. This movie's really cheap. This movie is Golan and Globus. But there's a lot of really, really talented, thoughtful character design and set design that went into this at certain points. Like, some of it's cheesy as fuck. Like, the throne in Grayskull. It's like, dude, I make that shit in my garage. That's literally just foam carved out and painted over. Like, and then you get things like Frank Langella's makeup.
Okay. You said it.
It was going to have to come out. There is no talking about why you love this movie without talking about, one, how Frank Langella looks in this movie, and two, his badass fucking performance as Skeletor, the only guy who gives a shit he's in this movie.
If you ever wanted a sterling example of how one blazing light can shine in the darkness, I point you to Frank Langella's performance in Masters of the Universe as Skeletor.
Everything comes to he who waits.
You cannot tell that that's Langella.
No.
You just, not in his voice, not in his enunciation, he's got so many prosthetics on him. You just would, if you had no idea who that was, even right now, so you're like, who's Frank Langella? You're IMDBing it and going, holy fuck.
Yeah.
That guy? Yeah. That's not Skeletor. Yes, it fucking is.
And even with all of the scenery in his mouth, he is still more intelligible than Dolph Lundgren in this film. And that in and of itself is impressive. But I watched this movie for Frank Langella's Skeletor, because you want to talk about the rest of the movie not taking itself seriously? I can't argue with that. The one person who's definitely fucking taking this shit seriously is the guy who is ad-libbing lines from Shakespeare into Masters of the Universe.
Yes, he is.
I am not in a forgiving vein this day. That's from Richard the goddamn Third.
Yes.
Are you kidding me, Langella?
Well, they probably looked at the dialogue and said, this is terrible. Like, we'll come up with something better yourself. And knew that the screenwriter hadn't read Richard the Third.
And not only that, but ad-libs the best fucking line of the movie.
Tell me about the loneliness of good, He-Man. Is it equal to the loneliness of evil?
What the fuck? How do you just... pull that out of your ass?
Yeah, that line just comes out of nowhere and goes, what, oh, wow, fuck? This movie got deep. Like, I was just watching, like, a 17-year-old travel across space and time with a fucking keyboard, and now you're fucking dropping this shit on
me. Can you say a line with that much philosophical weight in the same film that has a character called Karg? Is that allowed? Is it legal? I don't know, but Langella does it, and
or
oh
a guy
God.
Named Blade, because he has... blades.
Everyone has blades.
He wears.
You can't, that's not a thing you can
yeah,
have.
Yeah, but they, he does. They don't have two blades, and they don't wear
two blades. No,
they don't wear blades on their face. That's why he gets to be Blade, yo.
Oh, and I tell you what. Two things about this character of Blade. First of all,
oh wait, you know two things about him, because I don't remember anything more than him having blades.
I'm so glad that's what you set me up with, because first of all, there's apparently a backstory that was dropped about he was the his missing eye, He-Man ripped it out in battle, which is fucking rad, and I wish it'd been in the movie. Secondly, that actor, I am convinced, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is the person who wrote all of the IMDb trivia for this movie, because every other nugget is about that actor. And, like, it gets suspicious after a while. It's like, okay, you've said the same three things about this guy about six times. And, yes, he was the guy that choreographed all the sword fights in the movie, so I understand why he's playing a character called Blade, even though you mentioned Pew Pew before. This could be called Pew Pew the movie, because even though Masters of the Universe, if you remember the toys, I don't remember them having guns.
Oh, yeah, they did.
They did?
Yeah.
Okay. I just remember swords.
No, it was very much, that's the weird thing about it. It really is the bastard child of Star Wars and Conan, where it's like, can we put Conan the Barbarian in space opera? And they said, how do we do that? And, well, we'll have him transform into this thing, and he'll ride around in a battle cat, and they'll drive around in tanks, and they'll pew-pew at each other. And
Anthony DeLongis is his name. And literally, go right now to IMDb and look at the trivia. Every third thing is about him. He wrote the trivia. I swear to God, he did.
It's entirely possible. And also, the sword fights aren't any fucking good.
They're not good. They are in slow motion. And I understand why there's so many laser blasts in this movie, because it's the only thing that looks cool in the battles. Like, none of the sword fighting is any good.
No, the only sword fighting thing that happens of any worth is the moment that this guy, Blade, pulls out both swords and then goes full Conan the Barbarian for like 3 seconds.
He says, I've been waiting for this for a long time. And because you don't know that backstory, you're like, what the fuck is he talking about? I've been waiting for the invention of IMDb for so long. I have so much to say of me. Yeah. But as far as the plot goes, to kind of just drop us into it, it starts in Eternia, where we have one of those voiceovers, one of those epic, like, deep in the galaxy, far away.
It starts after they've run out of money and they've had to build a throne room in a garage.
Long, long ago, but after we ran out of money, comes this matte painting in the center of the universe. That is Grayskull. Okay, do you think Grayskull is like the White House? I'm still stuck on this. Do you think it's like the White House, where it's like, because it's the seat of power, every new administration just has to deal with the decor of, like, the previous first lady, and that's why it looks like that?
I'm pretty certain. It's also described in one of the cooler writing moments of the film. It is described as, you know, the citadel that is sitting on the edge of light and shadow.
Yeah.
Like, it is the thing holding the shadow at bay, and that's a cool concept. And you kind of want that to be imposing. You know, you kind of want that to be like, don't fuck with us.
Yeah.
And instead you get a guy whose face is a skull who's like, I kind of want to live there. So,
because if I don't have everything, then I have nothing. God, his dialogue in this movie is so good.
Yeah, no. Getting back to Langella, another great moment towards the end of that is he starts to, and you can tell it's a dialogue moment, because then they get back into, well, we have to have them fight now. But he has this moment where he gets in touch with the cosmos, and then all of a sudden he doesn't give a shit about all of his prisoners, because he's like, I'm in touch with the cosmos now. Like, what the fuck do I care about He-Man? Like, I'm so much bigger than this now. He's just a speck of dust in this cosmos.
Yeah.
Like, and that won't be around forever, but I'm a god now, until He-Man breaks my staff. And so I don't give a shit. But then all of a sudden he goes from saying that, you know, in not so many words, and then is like, nah, fuck it, I'm going to fight He-Man again. And so he then fights He-Man.
Well, He-Man strips him of his amazing Mardi Gras costume that he gets when all the planets align, and he just looks like the greatest, most fabulous drag queen of all time in that, like, gold.
You know what? That is actually, I love the design of that outfit. I think that's one of those great things where you get, this is what happens when you get really talented costumers and production designers on a nothing movie that nobody else cares about. And they're just like, fuck it, I'm going to do my job and make sure my shit looks good. And that, the Skeletor at the end of that, looks pretty fucking pimptastic.
He really does. He's like, he's looking great.
It found the lost city of gold, clearly, but yeah, you're looking great.
El Dorado, which is where the next Castle Grayskull will be moved to. But the thing about...
You think Castle Grayskull's like the castle in Krull?
I could spend this entire episode talking about Castle Grayskull in and of itself, in which Skeletor has kidnapped the Sorceress, which is the other part of his plan. By the way, do you know who's playing the Sorceress in this movie? Christina Pickles, better known years later as Monica Geller's mother. Monica Geller and Monica Geller's mother from Friends are both in this movie, and that tripped me out. When I saw her name in the credits, I'm like, oh, Christina Pickles, where do I know that name? Oh, from Friends. Hold the fucking phone. She is Monica's mom.
The Sorceress is really Monica's mom.
This is, and maybe that's what happened, is they go back in time, and it's like one of those alternate timelines where the Sorceress from Eternia is also Julie's mom in this movie. I don't know. It's weird. And by the way, I know they've talked a couple of times about remaking this movie, rebooting this franchise, and it's not off the ground yet, or maybe it is.
No, it's they've had scripts for it, and it's not happened.
I feel like they might do, you know, if they end up doing it, they might take place all in Eternia, or they might hold fast to this stellar screenplay and have the characters come to Earth, although they kind of already did that with Marvel's Thor, which I contend borrows a little bit from this movie. So I'm not sure if they would do that, but if they do, I have one piece of casting that I am steadfast on. I will not budge. Kevin Corrigan needs to play Kevin Corrigan. The whole time in this movie, they kept saying her boyfriend's full name was Kevin Corrigan. I was like, actor Kevin Corrigan? Yes, that when they remake this movie, let Kevin Corrigan be played by Kevin Corrigan. That would be amazing. And then I started thinking about Grayskull again. I may not have watched this as closely as I probably should have.
I think the only way to reboot this in this era where we are now is with Lord and Miller.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I mean, Lord and Miller would have a lot of fun with the man
element. And it would be called Lords of the Universe and also Miller.
It's like, it's one of those things that you don't really think about it too much as a kid. And then you become an adult and you're just like, why do they just keep taking things and adding the word man to it? Like, literally, that is the entire line of this. And then they shake it up every once in a while and put man at the beginning. And it's man at arms. Like, I'm watching the movie and okay, so here's one of the other things. Like, I say this is inspired by Star Wars. No, this movie rips Star Wars the fuck off.
Oh, my God. You got Bill Conti sitting in the corner doing his best, like, John Williams on a budget. This score?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me with this?
Yeah. It's, well, they not only lift character design from Star Wars, they lift an entire scene from Empire, but they get the scene wrong.
Wait, are you insinuating that Golan and Globus don't quite understand the material that they're trying to capitalize on? Because I will not hear of that.
Sometimes they rip off the bounty hunter scene from Empire where, you know, they walk through and there are all these great designs of bounty hunters on the fucking Star Destroyer. And, you know, Vader gives his speech and then he points at Boba Fett and says, and no disintegrations. And that is, that works. Like, it's just so good. In this one, they're like, yeah, let's do that, except let's name all of the characters.
Yeah.
So that everybody knows what they are. And so they start going through and it's like, Blade, and this is Karg. And then they get to Beast Man. And you're kind of like, dude, is he a mutant or is that his race? Like, are you really just, did you just, seriously, I feel like he just should look at him and go, really? I'm Beast Man because I'm of the Beast Men? Like, I have a name, bitch. Like, what
are
the fuck?
Are you accusing Skeletor of being prejudiced? Because I feel like that's an easy assumption.
I feel like that's what sticks out in that scene. It's like, I thought the idea of Beast Man was that was, and what a terrible name for him. And then the other guy gets in it. So he's like, really? Everybody else gets a name. He's just, he carries Blade, so he gets to be called Blade. You can't call me Fur or,
well, yeah, that's the thing is,
or Belt Guy. I have to,
like,
be Beast Man.
By the way, the woman describing all of them is the inimitable Meg Foster in this movie. So great. One of the, speaking of first ladies, one of the first ladies of junk food cinema, I feel. I mean, this is a woman who was in Blind Fury, They Live, The Stepfather 2, which I actually think is pretty cool. And not only, there's another one I'm missing in my list here.
And she is given the wonderful name that doesn't give her gender. Instead, she is Evil Lynn.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder where the Lynn action figure is. Because she's Evil Lynn, like who calls themselves evil? Like, who do, like, was mom and dad just like, you know what, this baby, I want her to grow up to be a powerful sorceress working for the bad guys. Let's call her Evil Lynn.
Leviathan,
or just let's call her evil. And well, what's okay. her middle name? Lynn.
Here's the thing. I imagine that there was, like, a registration period at whatever the attorney version of, like, the Hall of Records is. And it's like, name. And she's like, Evil Lynn. And the guy's like, are you saying Evelyn? Is your name Evelyn? No, Evil Lynn. Well, is that one word, or do you have an adjective as a first name and a name as a middle name? Like, I'm very confused. But I feel like
that is the extent of her character,
that's
too.
It. Evil. Oh, in her eyes, because Meg Foster's eyes are like
fucking amazing.
A wizard's headlights. They're ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she's the one going down and naming them all. So there's potential that those aren't their names. That's just her describing them when she's like Beast Man. Blade, green one,
Karg,
because it's I have a frog in my throat and I have to cough something. Karg, that's that one's name. So that may not be their actual names, because Beastman is an actual.
It could be short for Cargill.
No, it's not talking about itself enough. No, but what I think is crazy is that none of these. The only one of these characters that's from the actual toys, which, by the way, you were mentioning action figures, like.
Yeah, Beastman's the only one that was from, like, the cartoon.
No,
the
but
toys.
You were mentioning Star Wars and how Star Wars did this scene better where they didn't name them. You know when they did name them?
On the toys.
When the toys came out. So you have a movie you're ripping off that had that model, and then you're making a movie that's entirely based on action figures, and you're putting a bunch of characters in the movie that aren't even the action figures, and the only one who is Beastman, and it's like, of this group, and it's so where are these other, don't, you're right, don't name them. You don't have to name them. You can sell the toys when they come out. Oh wait, you already have a stockpile of toys that you should be converting over into adapting into the movie. It makes no sense. It makes, and this is the glory of Colin and Globus, is that they would adapt something, they would take something that was quote unquote popular, and they would have no idea how to turn it into a movie, because to them personally, it meant nothing. It was not significant to them. Ninjas were not significant to Golan and Globus. They didn't care about ninjas. They just thought ninjas were a popular thing and just had people making ninja movies. So that's why you have things like American Ninja 2, The Confrontation, Super Ninjas, fuck it. Speaking of fuck it, this movie, we mentioned that a lot of it takes place in, you know, in on Earth, and it's filmed at a mall and all these other. I found out this was one of the greatest things I found in my research. Almost all of the locations in the neighborhood that you see don't exist anymore because they were leveled by earthquakes in the 90s. We have covered a lot of bad movies on this podcast. We have never covered a movie so bad that God himself tried to strike its remnants from the face of the earth. And that apparently is what happened with Masters of the Universe, because none of those sets, and they're not even sets, it's a real neighborhood, doesn't exist anymore. Wiped off the earth, Old Testament style. So that's the movie you're getting in Masters of the Universe. It's kind of fantastic.
It is. It's super. The thing is, it never gets dull.
No.
Like, it's always trucking along, even when it's being at its most obvious or explaining its plot to the kids in the audience. But there's just so much going on that's entertaining enough at times. And then the moments with Frank Langella are why you're watching the fucking movie.
Fuck yes. And cutting no corners in this film is Frank Langella.
No, no. And we, of course, love actors like this who are like, I don't care what this movie is. You hired Frank Langella, you fucking get Frank Langella. It's people like Samuel L. Jackson. It doesn't matter how bad a movie it is. Have you ever seen Samuel L. Jackson sleepwalk through a terrible movie?
Show me a bad Max von Sydow performance.
Yeah.
Find me a bad... I dare you to find me a bad... This is...
Michael Caine. You always get fucking motherfucking Michael Caine. Like, always.
Even when he's just paying for his beach house, a la Jaws the Revenge.
Which also, summer of 87, buckle up for that worst of episode.
Oh my God, I forgot that was this summer.
Oh God. The thing is we are talking about a lot of... Like, that's the thing, is of... You can bag on Masters of the Universe all day. It doesn't even make it into the bottom five of mainstream releases of this summer, because when it gets bad this summer, it gets really bad. And we're not going to do four or five episodes kicking things in the balls. We're going to do one special episode where we just kick a couple things in the balls just to wrap up the summer, because wrapping up the summer without talking about some of the worst sequels in history that all came out in the same summer.
Yeah, I'm going to say something controversial. I think Masters of the Universe is Canon Film's best Superman movie, and they made an actual Superman movie.
Because
they are ripping off elements of Superman 2 in this film. Hey, did you happen to notice how the titles fly in at the beginning of this movie? Seems very similar to the Saul Kane produced, or the Donner directed movie, doesn't
think,
it?
I think you're ignoring the fact that the best Superman movie they ever made was Invasion USA, starring Chuck Norris.
So that one was on the Chuck pile, apparently. By the way, speaking of canon and Chucks, the more I think about this James Tolkien character, or who I'm calling Bald Fury in the film, the thing that I keep coming back to is it's 1987. Charles Bronson is basically an indentured servant to Canon Films. Do you think they wanted Charles Bronson to play that role? Because he's running around in this movie the entire third act with a shotgun, just blowing people away.
And gets this super fucking happy ending out of nowhere.
I got a castle. I'm like, whoa, hold.
Wait, why are you sitting at a throne?
Whoa.
Why do you have a girlfriend now?
Wait. Hold on. Why do you get Grayskull? I don't get it. Like, how are you? He-Man is staying here. Man-at-Arms is still here. Yes, Skeletor's gone. There's a sorceress. Like, I think in line of succession, you're like the Postmaster General of Eternia. Like, a lot of people are going to have to go down before you sit on that throne.
Like, it's to the end of Flash Gordon, you know, the great ending of Flash Gordon. Then they finally get over and they're like, and you are our Postmaster General. Hail! Hail, Baron!
Hail, Baron, yeah. Secretary of Labor!
Yeah.
No, I feel like Frank Langella definitely watched Flash Gordon before making this movie, and he looked at Max von Sydow and went, oh, that's how you make something out of nothing.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to do that.
Yeah, Flash, and the thing is there's part of me that wants to think that they ripped off Flash Gordon for this, but they didn't. They really didn't. Like, this is very much, it's all Conan, actually, there's one other thing I was going to bring up. So, this is the bastard child of Conan and Star Wars, and Corman science fiction films of the early 80s. There's a couple bits that are stolen whole hog out of Corman movies. Like, Corman, king of ripping off other people, fucking Golden Globus ripped off Corman. When do you hear that?
When it's Canon Films.
And, like, there's, like, all that hologram stuff from the beginning is fucking straight out of Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, my God. This is, like, the third movie we've talked about this summer that's ripping off a movie that ripped off Star Wars, ripping off Akira Kurosawa.
Yeah, like, it's, like, this is the copy of a copy of a copy of a copy.
Yeah.
And we've finally gotten down to where this is, like, the purple Xerox of the day that it's only worth is to sniff it and get that wonderful, you know, 3-second high off it.
Yeah.
It is...
Which we advocate.
It's a hell of a thing. Like, this movie's just a hell of a thing.
How great is that Skeletor is giving, like, hologram declarations to all of Eternia? Like, yeah. the Eternia Jumbotron that he can just access at any moment and just be like, hey, I'm king now. And they're just like, well, all right. I mean, the only person who can stop you is this greased up, supposedly not a Canadian with his hockey hair. What's his name? Gee-Man? Gee-Laman? Yeah, I think
that's... You know, they never really set up anything but that he is the head of the resistance. But if he controlled Grayskull to begin with, how is he the resistance?
Oh, I have another question.
Okay.
The famous I have the power, which is, of course, in this movie. He holds the sword aloft. I have the power. He had that sword in the whole fucking movie. He has been carrying the sword since frame one. Why is it suddenly the key to all power in Eternia?
Because he has to say it in Grayskull.
But Chekhov's, you know, powerful sword. It got used
in the third act.
Right, but it's had the power, though. Hey, this is the Tin Man, okay? Dorothy had the power to go home the whole time.
If that's the question you're asking, let me ask you a better question. I have the power to do what? Like, in the cartoon, he would raise the sword and say, I have the power, and he would turn from Prince Adam into He-Man. Like, that's what it did. He was already fucking He-Man, and instead he goes, I have the power to amplify my voice.
Maybe Grayskull is, and I'm back to Grayskull, maybe it's just the best apartment in Eternia, and he's saying, I have the power to rent it now, because the old tenant left, Skeletor's gone, now I live in Grayskull. I don't know.
It's such a great moment, we get it twice. We get it at the end of the movie, as we get it in the third act, and then we get it at the end of the movie again. And it's kind of hard not to be nostalgic for that second one. Like, when you see that, it's kind of like, I'm 8 years old again, and I'm playing with my He-Man figures in the backyard. And yeah, that's exactly what this movie is.
And speaking of stealing, you'll have to shed some light on this, but I read that apparently Gary Goddard has confirmed that he borrowed heavily from the New God stories, like Jack Kirby's New God storylines in the comics.
Oh yeah, no,
I don't know
all that cosmic stuff he's talking about at the end, all the Frank Langella stuff.
Oh, he literally says, I am a god.
Yeah.
I'm remembering that.
Yeah, no, he's very much playing with the Jack Kirby concept of godhood and power and being in touch with the cosmos and the power cosmic. And, you know, this is all stuff that Kirby played around with, you know, with Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer, and then in the New Gods.
And then I came in and took all the credit for it.
And this is the underlying... this is the underlying base of what they're playing around with this, which is my ultimate frustration with this movie. I would really like to see, there's some shots in this movie that he gets that really feels like an 80s fantasy film where you're like, you know, yes, it's a matte painting, but it's a wonderful matte painting.
Oh, I love the matte painting.
The matte painting of Grayskull is great. And yeah, seeing it out in the, you know, in the wilderness like that. And you see, you know, people walking because they've got extras going through dressed up. And it's like, dude, this feels like Kroll. This feels like, Conan. This is great. And they just can't fucking wait to get us to planet Earth so we can have that rockin' mid-80s sci-fi meets modern day.
We can make all these jokes about Japanese synthesizers because that's fucking funny.
And that's just where, you know, the movie is not at its best. Like, it's... You know, you don't have to really give us much of a character with He-Man, but give him something more to want than playing second fiddle to Courtney Cox. Like, literally, Courtney Cox is listed fifth, and it's her fucking movie.
Yeah.
She's the one who gets the happy ending and walks off. And of course, I hate to be this guy.
No, you don't. You are happy to be this guy.
I hate to be this guy.
You dress up as this guy for Halloween.
If she is sent back in time at the end of this movie to
there
save
should be
her
another
parents...
One of her?
What?
Where's the other version of her? Is that going to be your question?
No.
Okay.
No, because she clearly inhabits her own body back in time.
Clearly, yes. The movie sets that up brilliantly.
They have changed the timeline now, so she's not going to be where she needs to be to find the key to stop the bad guys all over again.
Okay, you're talking about classic time travel paradox. It will never work. Time travel will never work in a movie, because as soon as you start thinking about it, the whole ball of yarn just unravels. You just kind of have to accept it. It's never going to work. But one thing I do find interesting about the New Gods comparison is that Gary Goddard saw this as making what he called a motion picture comic book. And this is in 1987.
Yeah.
And then you think about, this movie has a stinger scene. After the credits, Frank Langella pops up out of the water and goes, I'll be back. And then it goes to black. They have a Mattel cinematic universe that they're trying to set up here.
Yeah.
That never got off the ground, but is so ahead of its time.
The elements in this that work are why you watch this movie. Because there is some really, you see the classic story of somebody grasping at something well outside their reach because they're working with some of the cheapest men in Hollywood who are themselves overextending themselves. And this is what that movie is. And there's stuff in here that just doesn't work, but the stuff that does, the concepts that do, you can see what he was hoping this movie would be, which is why I hate that we come to Earth, because I would have loved to see what this movie would have ended up without that. Mm-hmm. But that said, you still get some really stupid, goofy, wonderful moments that make this movie worth watching while you're waiting for the cool elements and while you're waiting for Langella to show up again.
And Langella makes even the silliest aspects of this movie work. Like, there's one moment where the portal opens and his forces start coming to Earth, and all of these like hovercrafts and like flying discs of his robot soldiers start coming through. What I should have been thinking was, this is fucking stupid. And instead, what I was thinking was, I wish Cannon Films hadn't gone under and that they made their own theme park, because this would be the 12 o'clock parade every single day. Would be Skeletor and his minions coming through the portal and being fought by He-Man and Man-at-Arms, and I would fucking lose my shit for that. That would be awesome.
So, yeah, so this is why I wanted to do this as a double feature, why I wanted to put these back to back. Having seen RoboCop and Masters of the Universe on the same night in my youth, I can't think of a better juxtaposition of the type of films we're talking about and we love talking about, which is, here on one hand, you've got RoboCop, which is a film that melted my wee little brain, that changed genre cinema at the time, that made a film that was prophetic and said it was okay to have satire and comedy in these types of films again, but that these films could be smart. And on the other hand, you know, that film has grown with me over the years. And then on the other hand, you have a film that I have affection for and grasp onto that affection with both hands despite itself. Like, every time I rewatch it, it dares me to not love it still. And I can't, because, you know, there is enough in this movie to love, and there is enough of what it got right for its time, that even though this is not a movie that I would definitely recommend to anyone. Like, there's several movies that we talk about all the time where it's like, you have to watch this movie. Trust me on this. Instead, I feel that this is the kind of movie that's like, did you grow up with it? Yeah. Watch it again. If you didn't, I don't know if it's going to hit, but yeah, these could not be more diametrically opposed. And I literally saw them back to back in 1987. And it's kind of crazy, and I kind of wish I could travel back in time and watch these on the big screen, you know.
Oh, you can. Let me just dial that up on the cosmic key here.
At the drive-in, and just kind of kick back and just see these movies again, sitting out in the Arizona desert. Like, it's one of my cherished movie memories. It's one of my favorite, you know, easily in the top 10 favorite memories of my life is just that night with my parents out, you know, watching these two movies back to back. So that's Masters of the Universe.
And that brings us to
the junk food pairing.
And this one was easy. It's a bucket of ribs, because in this movie, Gwildor steals a bucket of ribs from a couple, from Robbie's.
Chicken and ribs.
No. Well, Robbie serves chicken and ribs. They sell buckets of nothing but ribs, which is what he steals. It's just,
well, no, Manowar reaches in and grabs some fried chicken.
The point is, I live in Austin, Texas, one of the barbecue capitals of the fucking world. And you know what I've never seen? Anywhere you can buy a bucket of ribs. And that makes me sad.
Because we sell them right on the rack.
Right, but
you just get a rack of ribs.
I want you to take
those. You get the
ribs.
Whole like half rib cage of an animal.
Okay, but cut them up and put them in a bucket and sell me that bucket. Like it is wonderful excess, and that is what I'm looking for. Also, it reveals something really interesting about Eternia.
They're vegetarians,
which is maybe that's how He-Man got to look like He-Man. I don't know.
No. The sword is how he does it. That's why he's Prince Adam. Prince Adam of the pink shirt and the foppish hair is a vegetarian.
Fucking Prince Adam probably has a man bun. I can't deal with it. But there is that great line where they're like,
he's a Pilates teacher.
Oh, fuck that.
He's the guy who steals your girlfriend, yo.
Ugh. If that's the guy that steals your girlfriend, you are better off without that girlfriend. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah,
I have your girlfriend.
That's fine. I got this bucket of ribs. Guess who made out in that deal? Me. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Like I said, we are on iTunes, all of our episodes. Go there, rate and review us. We want to move up that list on iTunes, so please go out there and let us know what you think of the show. You can tweet at us, at Junk Food Cinema. You guys have really been, like, over the last few weeks, the caliber of comments and gifts and links that we're getting. We got a link from someone in Germany who went to a video store and they were selling what seemed like our entire show catalog, just like one movie after another, Frailty next to Battle Beyond the Stars, next to fucking Reign of Fire. And it's like, what is going on here? This is amazing. So keep that stuff coming. We really love talking to you guys. Facebook.com/junkfoodcinema if you want to like us there. You can follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at Bry Guy Salisbury. He is
at Massaworm, MASSAWYRM.
And you're also on Facebook?
Facebook.com/Massaworm.
And you're also on MySpace and Blinko and Quorum, and I'm just making some of these
up. My Friendster account is private, my man. I'm not going to share that publicly. That is for real-life friends only.
Your real-life online friends only? Yeah, sure. That makes sense. We're in Omaha August 12th. We are here in Austin, Armadillo Con, August 5th.
And if you're in Honolulu...
if you're in...
Honolulu Comic Con is coming up end of July. I'll be in Honolulu, and also I'll be at Dragon Con this year. I'm a guest at Dragon Con in Atlanta at the beginning of September.
They're going to watch the movie Dragon Slayer for like 15 hours, guys. It's going to be epic. Check that out.
That's actually not happening.
No? Oh, that's sad. But yeah, that's going to do it for this week's show. Again, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. You get all kinds of perks, and some quirks as well, including ad-free episodes early and bonus content like the mailbag we're about to record, so definitely check that out. But for now, I'm going to remind you...
Don't say goodbye. Say good journey.